welcome to a 45-minute panel discussion around connectivity and seamless integration of monitoring in patients treated on normal wards. And I would say we start with a brief round of introductions. Of course, we start with the lady.
My name is Marjolein Haafman. I work as a technical physician and a postdoc researcher at the Department of Anesthesiology at the University Medical Center Groningen. And also part of my job is working at the Innovation Center at the UMCG.
Very good.
So hi, everyone, and thank you for having me here. My name is Pau. I'm working in Masimo. And I'm the strategic manager in Europe, South Asia, and Australia, New Zealand for what we call remote patient monitoring and hospital automation, which basically means anything related to connectivity and moving data from one place to the other.
Great. I'm Sam Ajizian. I'm the chief medical officer of Medtronic's acute care and monitoring business. And thanks for the invite.
Very good. My name is Bernd Saugel. I'm the vice chair of the Department of Anesthesiology at the University Medical Center in Hamburg, and I'm also the chair of Forum 1 within the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care Medicine. So we only have 45 minutes, so let's just jump into our topics. I would say that we all agree that we as a discipline of anesthesiology were able to make anesthesia a very, very safe thing. So it's very, very rare that patients have serious anesthesia-related complications during surgery or even die. I would say that intraoperative mortality is so low today that it's even hard to measure and to describe. And yeah, in contrast to that, just the opposite, postoperative mortality is the main problem in perioperative medicine. Postoperative mortality is a consequence of major postoperative complications, and major postoperative complications usually cause alterations in vital signs. And that is where the problem begins. I think we would all agree that today patients on general care wards should have continuous vital sign monitoring. And I think we also agree that we don't do it today. It's not reality, not in the United States, not in Europe, and not in any other part of the world. And I think therefore that the first reasonable question is, and that is my first question to you as a panel, what are the main barriers? What are the issues we are dealing with today that continuous vital sign monitoring on the ward is not routine care?
I think there are a lot of reasons why we're not using it. Partly over the last years, I think devices really developed, but the validity and usability of the devices, although it's increasing, has not been established as much in clinical practice yet. Also because we're not used to monitor moving patients and we have lack of reference devices to do so. Besides that, there's often no right embedding in clinical practice also to evaluate the effective use of these sensors. And using the right alarm strategies to do so. So who is going to monitor the data? How does it fit in the work processes? And nurses at the wards are not used to interpret data from continuous vital sign monitoring. So what or who is going to assist them doing so? And I think the third thing that's also difficult is to have the right quality of studies to evaluate this. And that's also mainly to do with the fact that if nurses are getting used to use continuous monitoring, they do not want to do it without. And it's very hard to randomize this on a large scale, also because of lack of generalizability between work processes in hospitals.
Yeah.
Just a few things I think that are barriers.
Few major barriers that you already mentioned. And perhaps before our industry representatives answer the question, what are the main obstacles? One follow-up question for you as a clinician. I know that you do continuous vital sign monitoring within research projects. Do you, in your country or in an institution, use continuous vital sign monitoring in routine care?
No, we do not yet. At surgical departments, we do not. We only use it now at the ward for the hematology patients. And a kind of similar situation for the cardiology department or the critical cardiology unit. They use telemetry on the wards to do so.
Yeah. So you don't do it, we don't do it either. We do it only in research projects. So yeah, then what is the industry perspective? What are the main hurdles and barriers?
So and thank you for the question. It's an amazing point because this is what we're living every day. You started with the what we are doing, right? Which would be or what we should be doing, which is continuous vital signs monitoring. We like thinking about why are we doing this? Why are we planning to do continuous monitoring? So basically what we're trying to achieve is moving as soon as possible and in a safe way patients in their patient pathway, right? From higher acuity areas to lower acuity areas, including home, because home today it's a new care area that we can use. And in order to do that, we need to have patients moving, being reliably monitored without causing so many alarms as you were mentioning. And in order to do that, we need to have a wearable technology, which many companies are now developing the right technology inside those devices so we can measure accurately and we can really rely on the data that we are getting from those patients. And then as there's a big amount of data that we are going to use and we have to digest and process, we also need a clinical decision support tools that allow clinicians and healthcare professionals to make the right decisions at the right moment. So probably would be thinking that technology is a big barrier in general, but from the industry perspective, we think that this is not. It's not anymore because we do have the technology today. From what we're seeing, it's usually more maybe an organizational barrier. Sometimes there are difficulties in terms of implementation or in terms of human resources today in the organizations in order to make that shift. Also, financial barriers can be sometimes because there's a need of investment in order to do this shift towards continuous monitoring, towards this new plan. But to me, the biggest barrier that I would see, it's like a cultural barrier, is a conceptual barrier, because many times we see a healthcare professional saying, no, I don't want to turn my ward into an ICU. And this is something that we need to change in the healthcare people minds, which is, no, it's not, we're not trying to turn this into an ICU. We're just trying to better monitor the patient that you're having today already.
Yeah, I agree with both of those statements. And I would double down on the cultural barrier. When we as clinicians get continuous data on people, we think we need to look at it all the time. And what we need for this scalable growth of this kind of monitoring in the ward environment is for the device and the algorithms to do the work for us. So think about an airplane. There are computer systems running in the background that mine the data for things the pilots need to know about, and that's escalated clinical decision support, if you will. That's the kind of shift we have to create in that environment. And our companies have the technology, as do others. We have the connectivity, we have the algorithms, and we can drive the care. But then when you actually get into the hospital, it's really hard to get people to stop looking and let the technology do its work. And that's where you need to do a lot of education. You need to do targeted deployment of this kind of technology with your customer partners in key places in the hospital. It's different in every hospital, isn't it? Sometimes different places in the same hospital. And then build the wave of adoption slowly. So everyone agrees they want this, but then when they actually have it, it's a little hurdle to get over, isn't it?
And if I may add to that point, which I fully agree, sometimes we tend to blame technology when something is not working, and many times implementing new technology, it's not a matter of the technology itself, but it's also about people and processes. Yeah. So when we're implementing a new technology, it's not just about that technology itself. We need to choose the right technology, but we also need to put the right people and the right processes in place, which is key in order to make an implementation successful. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I totally agree. And of course, education is very important in this, as well as the support, for example, with the technical side of the use of this technology. But also, I think it's not all about the technology can do it for us, because we all always need, like, there are no devices on the market yet that can monitor every part of the early warning score we're using right now, for example. And you always have the clinical look of the nurse you need, or a measurement of the urine output, or just how the patient lies in bed, or how he or her is physically active. So I think if you talk about connectivity, it's about the integration of these, what we can measure and what we still need to know about the patient and how we are going to use it to provide the right care. And also, it's also about capacity management, for example. I think you have monitoring on the one side, but you have the level of care on the other. So it does not say that a patient can just lie on the ward with continuous monitoring instead of the ICU, after the ICU, but also depends on the level of care the patient needs at that moment and how many nurses are available at the ward to do so. So we also have to think about how, what our criteria are, how are we going to use or select the patients that are suitable for a certain type of monitoring.
Yeah, those are the kinds of, I agree, and those are the kinds of conversations we've found ourselves having with our customers in the U.S. as we've rolled out a wearable business, because it is different for every hospital, every cohort of patients, the nursing ratios, all those things you talked about. I would say, though, that we have a challenge in industry to teach and coach providers on maybe there's something better than an early warning system, right? Maybe we're seeing early pathophysiologic signatures that pop up in a single parameter. And this is data that's coming out of Houston Methodist, a huge hospital in the United States. They've got wearable data on thousands of patients every day, and they're seeing alerts from respiratory rate trends before triggering of early warning. And that's a huge paradigm shift, because sometimes you'll get a notification like that. You go and look at the patient and burn looks fine. What do I do? He's not in distress. I don't need to rush him to the ICU and intubate him. So we're being called in an earlier phase that, quite frankly, we don't get to see a lot. So the teaching just keeps going on and on. But I think once we get a core of adopters and some papers on this, it'll take off for sure.
You see, we agree on a lot of things, but I still like to play the devil's advocate, of course. So I think two topics I would like to dive in a little bit more, a little bit deeper. The first one is, I agree that we have the technology. Are we sure about the measurement performance of all the systems that are around? Because I think it's absolutely important that we are sure that those systems actually measure what they are supposed to measure, and that we have very, very rigorous strategies to make sure that those medical grade devices actually measure what they are supposed to measure. So how sure are we that not only your systems but all the other systems that are around are actually well validated? And the second topic is on connectivity, because this is a huge topic now and one of the focus of the scientific community at the moment. My personal experience is that if I try to implement a new system for research purposes, that it takes me months or years to connect the IT people of my institution and the industry partners. I don't even want to talk about data sharing and data protection issues. So many, many levels of complexity that I would say do not really advocate for an argument that there is, that connectivity isn't an issue. So first topic, validation studies or validation of devices in general, and the second, connectivity. Perhaps you can expand a little bit more on this.
Yeah, I think it's probably similar for both of us, right? Two big companies, we bring a medical grade device to market. There are going to be regulatory approvals in every region of the world that require validation and verification studies to meet the thresholds of that approval. That is all part and parcel of getting that approval. Secondly, we usually do other studies, smaller scale studies, comparing the performance of that device to another device that we're replacing. But you're right, it's a confusing world in terms of wearables. And many of you in the audience probably have Garmins or Fitbits or Apple Watches on and things like that. Why aren't those good enough? And patients want to use those too. Well, they don't connect to the mainframe. They're not verified medical grade. And look, as a physician, if I'm going to change your oxygen level or I'm going to change your diuretic, I need a medical grade input. I don't want to know what your smartwatch says when you're at the top of a mountain. I need medical grade things. And I think that is a core belief in our business.
Yeah, so in terms of monitoring, we definitely need to evaluate technologies that we use. This is key. Something that is very, very challenging when we are monitoring vital signs definitely is motion. And we're thinking about patients being continuously monitored with wearable technologies, they will be moving. So definitely this is something that is in the core of our DNA, and there are many studies showing that we can do that reliably. So as we were saying earlier, choosing the right technology is key, because anyone can develop a nice hardware with a sensor that provides you a number, but providing an accurate number, this is key. So key players in the industry, we are showing that we are able to do that through medical publications. And this is one thing. On the regarding to the other question you were asking about how challenging can be or how difficult it can be with the connectivity part. So here are two parts. One, which is the industry role, which would be making easier for the healthcare system this connectivity. But there's also a part on the healthcare side, which would be making sure that internal processes within the healthcare industry are smoother. And I'm thinking about the internal processes that a hospital has, for example, in order to implement certain technology. We as industry, we need to enable them to have this process. We need to support them, making those processes smoother. But there's also some work that needs to be done on both sides of the coin. Yeah.
Yeah, we found with our wearable experience in the United States that if you can't meet the customer where they already are, like you mentioned, your IT folks can take a year to get things going. If we come in and
not
say,
only mine, also
everyone's right. If we come in and say, you must use this set of things, and sometimes there has to be considerable ripping and replacing of infrastructure to implement those, we're not going to be successful, right? We have to meet you where you are. We have to be able to be like a doorbell you buy for your house that automatically connects to your Wi-Fi. You don't have to change your router. You don't have to change your provider. It's simple. And that's how we do business in the U.S. It's the way we're hoping to do things here in Europe. Europe obviously is a little more complicated because of the variable cybersecurity laws, data protection. But that's our job as big companies, is to solve big problems like that. And we're confident we're doing it.
What is your experience as a researcher?
Yeah, well, I work both as a researcher, but I'm also involved in some projects we're doing on continuous monitoring in clinical application. So we haven't done it yet, but we will hopefully very soon. And yeah, we have the same experiences. I think that there is a lot of that can be offered from the companies that are willing to help us integrate all the devices. But there's still a lot of discussion within the hospital as one thing, like what are the terms for which data we can interchange. It doesn't matter if we do it in the hospital or at the patient's home, for example. Which data are we going to allow to get into the electronic health record, or how are we going to integrate that, and which devices do we want to or which we do not? And so there are a lot of discussions going on before you can actually do something. And then there's often face the issue that there's a large gap between research and clinical application. And yeah, we try to make this gap a bit smaller, but that's also very difficult because our work in academic hospital, where it's very clear something is research or it is clinical practice. And we say, okay, but we need like this prototyping way of this smaller cycle to be integrated, to be able to implement something, and then see how it works, and then expand with some new results, for example, so we can prospectively evaluate new technologies or new algorithms we can use for continuous monitoring, for example. That's just not the way things are organized currently. So that makes it very difficult. Yeah. And a lot of things are just scary, I think. Like, okay, this is new. We haven't faced this before. How are we going to deal with this?
Yeah, yeah.
And then but you have to convince, like, okay, it's okay. We do the same things, like, but then with a wire. So it's not really...
Right, yeah. Right. Well, and the other thing that customers often struggle with as they go to, from, let's say, Q4 hour monitoring to continuous is, well, maybe I'm not getting every vital sign continuously, but you're getting a lot more than nothing in between those two points. So, you know, if you're monitored Q4 hours, 96% of the time, you don't have any input coming in. You might as well not even be near the hospital, because if there's not enough nurses, they're not going to get to you. So you're really unmonitored. So putting on a wearable device that connects easily and enables workflow, not puts you on the keyboard more, puts you on the keyboard less, tells you with clinical decision support, go look at the patient, that's valuable. But yet everyone agrees, and there's still an adoption barrier because it is a different way to practice.
Yeah, and it can help you to prioritize patients, you know, because
correct.
You now we are treating every patient on that general ward the same. So we
yes.
we do a round, we
yes.
take vital signs, and we don't prioritize a more critically patient over a patient who is there for 4 or 5 days and didn't even have a single abnormal vital sign.
Yeah.
So I think a good argument for clinicians, for nurses, is, okay, those systems may give you the opportunity to really focus on those few patients on the ward who really need your attention now.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a call. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say there is a time shift now. I think, for example, in our hospital, but also in other hospitals in the world, you see there's the situation becomes more like an emerge situation. Like we know we need to act now and do something because we need to replace those manual measurements of nurses doing, which is very time consuming. But also there's a lot of new constructions. For example, in our hospital, we have hopefully somewhere in by 2035, we have like renovated the whole place, including all the patient rooms at the wards, which will be mainly single patient rooms. And then, the question also arises, like, how are we going to survey them in the right way? And
mm-hmm.
so, despite all the barriers and we face, I think people are also seeing the possible advantages. But the question is then also, do we really need to monitor every patient on the ward? I think that's another question we haven't addressed yet. But
my question to that question would be, why not?
Yeah.
If we have the tools, and if monitoring them it doesn't become a problem, mm-hmm. why not having information about those patients so we can look at it when we need to?
Yeah.
But it's not affecting their life. Of course, if we have a technology that is causing more problems than the value that it's adding, of course it makes no sense.
Right.
But if we make it until a point that, like, how many people of us are wearing right now watches? This is a medical grade watch, and the data that is giving me, it's accurate and can be clinically used. So then why not? I'm happy to wear a watch every day of my life. Why shouldn't we have that? And as this technology keeps evolving, why shouldn't we be collecting all the data in order not just to record it, but once we have data and we have it in a structured way, of course we can integrate it to an EMR or whatever system you need, but you can give it other applications. You can visualize it somewhere else. You can use it for research. And this is why I was going earlier to the why. Why are we doing things? If we're thinking about the surgical patient, probably it's not just about monitoring vital signs in the wards of for surgical patients. Probably it's also understanding, as we have discussed, that maybe this patient has to start being monitored a few weeks before the surgery. So we make sure that this patient arrives at the surgery in the best possible way, that we ensure that this patient will recover sooner. So we monitor the patient in the entire pathway. And this technology and these processes are enabling to do that.
Yeah, and why not? I would add, we're a profession of curiosity, a profession of science, and a profession that's always in the pursuit of more information. And I believe we're going to unlock some very interesting trends when people start wearing devices like this continually. And ultimately, the journey about connectivity. Connectivity is one of the bricks in the foundation that leads to personalized medicine. So that 5 years from now, if you're fixing my hip or something and you're giving me an anesthetic, it's informed by vast amounts of physiologic data, probably genomic and pharmacogenomic data, probably other data around activity, influencing prehab, all these other things that will create the ability for you, the anesthesiologist, to give me the most targeted precision care that I can get. And that'll be on the surgical side too. I mean, all of medicine will evolve with this data. I'm confident we're going to see that because of the trends we're seeing on patients that are wearing monitors continuously now in the U.S. The data is remarkable. So we may become, a lot earlier interveners in the cascade of deterioration. But that also means we can intervene earlier when patients are improving and drive care. There's another side of this, not just deterioration. So I'm excited. I would love to see everyone with a wearable on, obviously.
I like the direction of our discussion because I think everybody now learned that we are all enthusiasts. So our discussion should be optimistic and constructive. Yes. And I found it very interesting. You just spoke from about your hip replacement surgery in 5 years from now. You mentioned the year 2035. So you're a little bit less optimistic.
No, that's for the whole reconstruction.
I know. But yeah. I think we need to be realistic here. So 5 years from now is a very optimistic estimation, I would say. But what are, for the audience, the concrete next steps that we need to make? Do we need more studies? Do we need other devices? Do we need more education and training? So what do we want to do together to make it a reality that everybody is continuously monitored?
Well, two things here, right? I believe you can all provide a personalized anesthetic to me right now when you use processed EEG monitoring and you use in near infrared, INVOS and BIS, right? There's no doubt. Patient is their own control. You can titrate your medication to get the exact effect you need from patient to patient to patient. That's personalized care. We've been doing it for a long time, or trying to, right? Secondly, as far as connectivity and continuous monitoring, the data is building up. There's so many studies, and yet adoption is a problem. We have to, as companies, focus on getting you, the customer, to actually get over that barrier of, gosh, this looks weird. I don't know what to do when I see a patient early, and get over the right cohort to pick and things like that. And that's working at the bedside when we deploy a system. And I think we're very good at that.
I would say that, of course, more papers, more publications are welcome. But I would say that we already have some papers showing great figures. I mean, we have been running studies for over 10 years in which we have shown that having continuous monitoring in an orthopedic surgical ward, by the way, we have been reducing ICU readmits. We have been reducing rapid response teams activations. We have been saving about $1.5 million a year in the American healthcare system. And this has been for over 10 years. I mean, data is there. Of course, more data will be welcome. What we need is just people willing to start doing it. We already have some. There are several early adopters that are working with it, that they have already shown great results. Of course, at a smaller scale, by now. But I mean, data is there. To us, it's obvious that's the direction. We only need them wanting to do it because it's their decision. Yeah. We are providing the tools. We're providing the resources on the technical side. To us, it's just them wanting and willing to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to work with society leadership around the world, this AIC, ASA, no matter where. Post-operative mortality is a call to action. This is not something that's a little problem over here. It's like the number 3 or 4 cause of death, post-operative mortality. Nobody knows that when they go in for their surgery. Patients need to find out about this. We need to respond as an industry and as a specialty. It's a mandate. If we ran a hospital, I think all of us would be focusing on that and have a task force to monitor it and drive it down as low as possible. And continuous monitoring is foundational to that solution.
Yeah, I always find it interesting. You will know that from your hospital. So if surgery is over, usually the surgeon calls the family and tells them, okay, surgery is over, everything went well, your patient is fine and he's on the ward. And usually the patient is still under anesthesia then. And we wrote that in an editorial, a little bit provocative, of course, but we would say that an honest call at this stage would be, okay, surgery is over, but the most dangerous times are still ahead. Of course, we wouldn't like to do that, to tell that to the families, but this would be the realistic call. So I agree that the postoperative period is the thing that we need to tackle. And yeah, you mentioned a couple of things. So one follow-up question, perhaps: do we need the definite, robust, large, randomized trial showing that continuous monitoring actually reduces, let's say, 30-day mortality or so? Or do you think that the small incremental studies that we build up are enough?
There's so much data already. Look, we get data paralysis. You know, look at the data around processed EEG. There's thousands of articles. Look at the data around near-infrared, pulse oximetry, you name it. And yet we still have adoption barriers, still with those old technologies. We have enough data to show in small, targeted, well-connected cases that the technology makes a difference. There is going to be a big ramp in data in this next calendar year, this year and next. And I think that will help drive adoption. But look, it's sort of a parachute study, isn't it? What's better, monitoring 6 hours apart or looking at things in between? I mean, I wouldn't want to randomize my patients in my hospital to that study. I think that's unethical to compare that. And so that's where we have to go, is studies that show retrospectively, after intervention, we can make meaningful changes in significant events that lead to backwards care.
Yeah, I don't think randomized controlled trials are that suitable for using new technologies like this, especially because you have a very high learning curve in these types of implementations. You could maybe use some cohort, multiple randomized controlled trial strategies or incremental increases. I think the main barrier on the randomized controlled trials is also, what do we pick as an outcome measure? And there's no standardization on that yet, so it's very hard to compare potential studies based on this as well. Mm-hmm. For example, there are some very clear, like the ICU admissions or mortality, for example, but these are very, luckily, a relatively low percentage of your total population, so you need to monitor a lot of patients before you can say anything about these outcomes. So you need to search for like more common outcome measures that are common for all patients that you're going to monitor. But the registration of these outcome measures are very different for different departments, but also between hospitals. What can we get out of our electronic health records? What do we need to measure prospectively during these studies? So that makes it also very difficult. And I think there's more need for good implementation strategies. So what do we need to do when you go to implement it? But also, how can we make the business cases you already mentioned? So I think a lot of hospitals are also in doubt to start because there's not really a strategy out there that they can use to apply, but also to measure in the end, what will this do for our hospital? Because the funding agencies often not really useful for the continuous monitoring in hospital, because they say it's nice that you can reduce the number of beds you're using at your ICU, but why should we pay for the wearable devices then, or for the people watching it?
That's a very good point. We usually have that conversation, and financially, and if we leave the clinical outcomes at one side, financially, if we're able to have our patients less days occupying a bed, therefore we will have a bed free for more days, therefore we'll be able to manage more patients, this will increase our capacity, therefore we will get more revenue from these funding associations, right?
So, but if you do not have the people to fill the beds, like the staff, difficult to upgrade your prediction, for example.
And this, definitely. This is a super interesting discussion. And of course, in every country or every healthcare system probably is being managed slightly different. Mm-hmm. But definitely, cost-effectiveness studies are also being performed about implementing rapid response teams. We are seeing it also that they are showing important savings by using the data that they are seeing in their hospitals after implementing a rapid response team and before doing it. So there's also data there. It's not huge studies, but we are seeing that cost effectiveness also. And to me, going to your question would be, I wouldn't say let's ask any patient, but if you were behaving as a patient, you as an experienced clinician, and they were asking you before you are going under surgery that you have to go, would you like having continuous wearable monitoring after you're discharged to the ward? What would you answer with the data you have available today? Would you answer yes? Or would you answer no?
It depends on the vital sign, to be honest. My answer would be yes, of course. I would love to have a continuous monitoring of oxygen saturation, heart rate monitoring. I would like to have respiratory rate monitoring because this is a very, very important variable when it comes to predicting outcomes. So I get the point. I still think that to convince stakeholders in the hospital, to convince other clinicians, we should think about intelligent designs for studies, randomizing patients to different interventions, and showing an improvement in heart outcomes. I'm well aware that this requires a large amount of patients. We are talking about 10,000 patients plus studies there, but we made the experience in the past in many different sectors. Let's cardiac output guided management in the OR, other areas, that if we are not able to come up with a definite trial with heart patient centered outcomes, that it's very, very hard to get our ideas across. So I take a very, very puristic research perspective here.
Yeah, I would take a
we have to join forces then with hospitals all over the world.
I would take a pragmatic approach to that question. And I would say, well, of course I want it, but who is looking at it?
Yeah,
that is the big problem, right? So look at, like, in my career, telemetry started. It was a great thing. People at risk for bad things were put on telemetry. Someone looked at it. Now we've got someone in a basement looking at 100 monitors. Alarms are going off everywhere. I wouldn't feel that great if I was on telemetry. Mm-hmm. But if you give me a closed system, comfortable form factor that connects to the mainframe, gets the notifications out to the people that need them, and they know what to do with them, I'm all in. And that's the bar for our company, is to bring something like that to the market that makes it easier so we don't have to fill the basement with people looking at alarms going off and responding. So that's a key part, as we have less and less nurses too. Mm-hmm. We can't ask them to have that burden of alarm fatigue and things like that.
Absolutely. Great insights. And I think we still agree that we should have continuous monitoring on all of our patients. We have a microphone here. Are there any comments, questions from the audience? Bazi, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you very much for an interesting presentation. I think there are two things, really. We can keep asking for data forever and a day, and it won't change things. What changes things is clinical leadership. So if you look at Medtronic, if you look at Masimo, if your CEO says, we're doing this, we're doing it. If you say that in a hospital, there'll be 25 dissenting voices say, no, we're not doing that. No, that doesn't work for me. No, it's not my patient. So what you need, first of all, is clinical leadership.
Yeah.
Second of all is, when you look at industries, the airline industry doesn't just monitor those airplanes that crash. They monitor every airplane because they learn from the good bits as well as the bad bits.
Absolutely.
And the third thing is, if you're looking at personalization, you can't have something that works for everyone because it's not personalization. So we need to decide what we're trying to do. First of all, I think clinical leadership is really, really important to say, this is what we're doing and you got to follow me, and 80% of people will follow you.
Yeah.
The second thing is, we got to understand that the good and the bad need to be monitored so we can refine our monitoring. And third of all, you know, we need to do what's right. And what's right is obvious, but we keep avoiding it because we think there's somehow some clever solution somewhere out there, and there isn't.
Right.
What we have is what's in front of us.
Yeah, right. Great point. And of course, great point to understand the differences between industry and hospital systems and clinical systems. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Any other comments or questions? Can we have the microphone in the second row? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Frank Block, longtime member of the ISO-IEC Joint Working Group on Alarms. And I think that what you're talking about is ultimately an alarm system. And one of the first things in the standard says, if you're going to have an alarm system, patients should do better with it than they would do without it. And I think the challenge, the real challenge of the postoperative monitoring is that you're looking for rare events. You're looking for a patient death in a postoperative ward that may be as low, George Blake might tell us, as 1 in 1,000 patient days. And so then the question is, well, what is your false alarm rate? And I'll suggest from years of clinical experience that you're probably never going to get below about 4 false alarms per day. So if you take that 4 false alarms per day, that's 1 true alarm and 4,000 false alarms. And if you look at the literature, not only from medicine, but also from industry, people ignore the alarms in proportion to the perceived percentage of false alarms. If they think they're 50% false alarms, they ignore 50%. If they think they're 90% false alarms, they ignore 90% of the alarms. But it's not the right 50% or the right 90%. So I think that until we can solve the false alarm problem, it's going to be a very difficult sell to bring this in. And if you're wondering why doctors and nurses are burning out and quitting and finding other things do, I think the alarms are a major part of that.
I want to take that.
Yeah.
I got my hand up first.
We run out of time, so quick answers to this important question.
Frank, you got to look at the data coming out of Houston Methodist. It's 2 false notifications a day. These are not alarms. An alarm is go look at the patient, a noise and a visual signal. A notification is different, and that's a part of this paradigm shift here. This is not going to be single parameter threshold-based alerts. Of course, those are in there for safety reasons. This is patient as their own control, machine learning continuously, and trend departure. So I get a call, I get a notification that Mark has trended on his respiratory rate. I go look at him. I may not do anything. I may get a chest x-ray. I may do this. I may do that. But I'm seeing him earlier in the cascade. The data will show and has already, the data has shown and will show more in larger amounts, spoiler alert, that those notifications, when ignored, precede precipitous events. And we talk about the cost of people going to the ICU when we run out to the floor and code them. I care less about the $27,000 that it costs the system. I care more about that patient's neurological outcome. I care more about their renal outcome. They all take hits. And so this type of system is completely different than what we've been working with for a long time. And it's going to challenge ISO. It's going to challenge FDA. It's going to challenge HPRA to find ways to get these to market because it doesn't fit into the old standard. And we have to talk about that.
Quick reply from you.
Sorry.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure you agree with all that.
That's good. If I had to say just in one sentence, we never forget about data accuracy in order to generate real events, real alarms when it's needed. So high sensitivity, high specificity of technology, check the course of the technology and choose the right technology in order to reduce false alarms. That's it.
Thank you very much. I think we could continue for hours, but we need to be on time. So we are on top of the hour. So thank you very much for the insightful discussions. I learned a lot. I hope that you learned a lot. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the Congress. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Bernd. Good job. That was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. That was great.